Okay, everyone's comfortable? Your hands and feet and every part of you is finding the right place, and you're all relaxed and ready to go. Okay. I'm going to start with an invocation which I was asked to give. Of course, they didn't know the content of it when they asked me, but they asked me to give an invocation for a conference on... Does it really do that every time you use a P or something? Or a D or a B? Hare Krishna. Pa, pa, ba, ba, ma. Okay. Good. So this was a conference on devotee relationships, which was organized in Alachua, Florida, in August of 1993. And they asked me to give an invocation for it, which I'll now read to you. An invocation is a calling for, traditionally, a calling for God. These days, more often, a summoning forth of desired qualities within ourselves. I wouldn't suppose that you expect me to summon forth something valuable on my own. Rather, since this is a gathering of devotees of the Sankirtan movement, I'd suppose my role should be to help us get started in doing that work of invocation together. To that end, I'd like first to suggest that we call forth our remembrance of Srila Prabhupada, of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and of Radha and Krishna, because it's only through them that we all have relationships with one another. Our present relationships as friends, partners, and family members will last for some time, but they'll all soon be cut and reshuffled. Only the ties we have through Krishna as spiritual living beings will permanently endure. Therefore, our present relationships gain meaning and value the more they draw us closer to Krishna. And unless they bring us toward Krishna, they have no value at all. Next, I'd like to suggest that we invoke our Shraddha, our faith in Krishna, and the process of Krishna consciousness. Shraddha Shabde Vishvash Kori Sudridha Nishtray Krishna Bhakti Koilo Sarvakam Karma Kritohai. We can automatically perform all supporting activities by rendering transcendental loving service to Lord Krishna. Firm, confident faith in that process of devotional service is called Shraddha. By performing pure devotional service, one automatically receives moksha, liberation from repeated birth and death. So what to speak of less valuable achievements like morality, prosperity, and satisfaction for the mind and senses. And therefore, I'd like to suggest that we invoke our attitude of open acceptance and eagerness for everything favorable for Krishna conscious devotional service. The association of devotees, the service of the deity, the chanting and hearing of the holy names of Krishna, the study and discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam, and the desire to live in the atmosphere of Vrindavan. These five items can bring us everything we might desire in life. Let us also invoke our rejection of everything unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. We can happily afford to protectively close our hearts to sense gratification and mental speculation. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmajanavritam anakulyena krishnanushilanam bhaktiruttama sarvopadi vinir muktam tatpratena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktiruchate. For this, we can make good use of healthy doubt and Krishna conscious skepticism, clear judgment, and trained discrimination, because these can help us distinguish between substance and illusion. And that understanding can uproot for us the threefold miseries of material life. In particular, we can benefit by being careful to keep mundane ideas, mundane solutions, and mundane values from displacing Krishna's ideas, Krishna's solutions, and the eternal values of Krishna consciousness. We can call our attention especially to the trap of confounding the mind with the spirit soul and psychology with spirituality. For those for whom this trap is a way of life, therapy takes the place of sadhana. Psychologists take the place of the guru, and mental and emotional journeys take the place of progress on the spiritual path. To illustrate what I mean, I'd like to mention a well-respected guide for many people of our generation. He's a practicing psychiatrist, educated at Yale, and he brings to his work many qualities we think of as spiritual: openness, honesty, maturity, concern and respect for the people he works with, and a commitment to inner growth. He's also extremely articulate. One of his books is The Road Less Traveled, A New Psychology of Love, Traditional Values, and Spiritual Growth. On page 1 of the introduction, he tells us that as a psychiatrist, he feels he ought to mention at the outset the assumptions that underlie his book. Here is the first of them. I make no distinction between the mind and the spirit, and therefore no distinction between the process of achieving spiritual growth and achieving mental growth. They are one and the same. by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, those of us here, the participants, the organizers, the presenters, do recognize the distinction between the soul and the mind. And we can keep in view the differences between methods meant for spiritual growth and those meant for mental growth. Methods meant for mental growth never get us off the material platform. They never factually meet the needs of the spirit. But the process we've been given for spiritual growth takes care of both the spirit and the mind. So as this conference proceeds, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and the grace of Krishna, we can strengthen our conviction that to soothe all distress, mend all fractures, heal all wounds, and bring about perfect wholeness, balance, and harmony, there's no better method than the process of pure devotional service and the chanting of the holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So that was our invocation. It came about from the observation that there's some pretty weird things going on these days. I had a godbrother who approached me. Oh, not approached me, but I didn't see him for a while, and then all of a sudden I started seeing him again, and he was so much happier and so much more at peace with himself and so much more bright and so much more up on everything, because he'd finally come to terms with his inner child. And he didn't talk to me about Krishna anymore, but his inner child must have been a really talkative fellow, because he just kept on advertising how happy he was to be free and at peace with himself. And of course the inner child, little brat, was only one of those creatures that started appearing in our temples and even in our Bhagavatam classes. And I sort of thought that the time had come to question their legitimacy, or at least to question whether they might possibly be in the wrong place. It's my observation that a pronounced interest in other methods of self-improvement often reflects a simple loss of shraddha, or faith. If we believe what we're told from our scriptures, just chanting Hare Krishna can free a person once. Just chanting Hare Krishna once can free a person from the reactions of more sinful activities than he can commit. It goes without saying that if we're in trouble of some sort, physical trouble, mental trouble, emotional trouble, relationship trouble, financial trouble, or whatever other kind of trouble we might be having, it's a consequence of our previous activities. And from Nectar of Devotion, from Srimad Bhagavatam, from Chaitanya Charitamrita, we understand that we can fix all of this by chanting Hare Krishna and getting free from our false identification with matter. But as we lose faith in that process, we start asking ourselves, what's wrong? Why doesn't it work? And what else can I do? And we don't ask our spiritual master, we don't ask the deities, we don't ask the books. We go down the street to the library or the paperback bookstore or some other place, and we find some other solution. We find out what it would take to make Krishna consciousness work for me, which invariably is something other than Krishna consciousness. If I only had financial prosperity, if I only had some little mental manipulation done on myself, if I only could fix XYZ thing with my health, if I could only ditch this stupid, idiotic wife that I've got and get the nice one down the block, if only I could do this or that or the other thing, then I could be so Krishna conscious. Or then I could be so much more happy and at peace with myself and so much more integrated and whole. And when I'm all of those things, then naturally, as a consequence, I'd be so much more Krishna conscious. This is all bunkum. It's all rot. It's all trash. It's all the propaganda of the illusory energy, Maya. And we buy into it only when our faith in Krishna consciousness is on the wane. And that faith in Krishna consciousness can't be restored by any other method than Krishna consciousness. By association, by chanting, and so on. It's a basic, or we find in the very first chapter of Nectar of Devotion, let's find it, what are the characteristics of pure devotional service? Characteristic one, someone tell me. That's the last one. First one? Yes, it gets rid of all inauspiciousness. Means? Yes, specifically? Immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. Immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. And then Srila Rupa Goswami goes through that and explains what all kinds of material distress means. Sinful activities we're performing now, sinful activities for which we've gotten the reaction, sinful activities for which the reaction is just about to smash us. Sinful activities for that which we haven't yet done but are planning to do. Sinful activities for that which we're not even planning to do but for which we have a seed of desire within our hearts. Because the desire is there, we're going to make a plan. Because we make a plan, we're going to do it. And because we do it, we're going to get smashed. So there are so many different stages of sinful reaction. If someone's very ugly, if someone's very poor, if someone's suffering from some disease, if someone's in hot water financially, if someone's in trouble legally, these are all results of past sinful activities. And similarly, if one's mind is a great big mess, that's also a consequence of past sinful activities. And all of these things cause distress. Legal trouble causes distress. I'm ugly, so I feel distress. I'm poor, I'm in distress. And pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. Second characteristic, beginning of all auspiciousness. All the good qualities develop in the person of a devotee. Whatever good characteristics a person may hope to develop all come about if we simply become Krishna conscious. And Rupa Goswami gives extensive evidence about that. And the third characteristic is that it automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. These are all characteristics of Krishna consciousness. So what more do you want? What's the biggest impediment to spiritual realization? Someone.
Association with other devotees.
Someone else. Yes.
Think something else more important than the process of self-realization.
Yes. This is the verdict of the Kumaras in Srimad Bhagavatam. The biggest obstacle to Krishna consciousness, the biggest obstacle to spiritual realization, is to think that there's something else which has a higher priority. Think that something else is more valuable, more important, or higher up on the priority list than Krishna consciousness. That's the biggest obstacle. Now, to get down to some of the specifics of this obstacle, we've heard a lot lately about the need for hearing Raskata, the need for developing the mood of the gopis and following in their footsteps, so on and so on and so on. My contention is that there's a more urgent and immediate need in our society and among our members, and that need is the need to understand that I'm not this body. I don't think we're there yet. The material acharya that I quoted is fairly standard in his views. He doesn't quite understand, although he's clearly interested in spiritual topics, he doesn't understand that he's not this body. He doesn't understand it. He thinks, and he conclusively thinks, I am this body. And I sometimes wonder whether he's alone or whether he has some friends in our own society. What's the beginning of knowledge? All the answers in the front row today. Yes, humbleness. Beginning of knowledge is humbleness. We're about to embark on the project called, for those of you who are following the little course outline, How to Lower Your Self-Esteem. It's taken to be a defect, a fault. If somehow your self-esteem isn't way up there, then you must be doing something wrong and naturally you'll be messed up. Our philosophy doesn't agree with that. We don't think that the real problem is to flex those muscles of self-esteem and build them up until you finally come to really appreciate and relish and glory in your own superior qualities. That may be fine for some, but that's not what we're trying to do here. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, now let's see, I haven't found the place actually. Ah, there it is. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wrote only first 4 or 8 verses. Trinadapi suni chaina tarori vasihishnana. Amanadena manadena, amanina amanadena kirtaniya sadati. The beginning is that one should think oneself lower than the grass. It should be more tolerant than a tree, not expect personal honor, and always be prepared to respect others. In such a humble state of mind, he can always chant the holy name of the Lord. Uttamha apanake mani chanadham dvi prakare sahishnuta kare vrikshasam. These are the symptoms of one who chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Although he's very exalted, he thinks himself lower than the grass on the ground. And like a tree, he tolerates everything. Uttam ha Vaishnav Habe Nirabhiman Jive Samman Dive Jani Krishna Adishtan. Although a Vaishnava is the most exalted person, he's prideless and gives all respect to everyone, knowing everyone to be the resting place of Krishna. E Mataha Ye Krishna Namaloy Sri Krishna Charane Tare Tar Prema Upajoy. If one chants the holy name of Lord Krishna in this manner, he will certainly awaken his dormant love for Krishna's lotus feet. Kahite kahite prabhur dhainya badila shuddha bhakti krishna tani magite lagila. As Lord Chaitanya spoke in this way, his humility increased, and he began praying to Krishna that he could discharge pure devotional service. Premer shabhav yaha premer sambandha shemane krishna mor nahi premagonda. Wherever there's a relationship of love of Godhead, its natural symptom is that the devotee does not think himself a devotee. Instead, he always thinks that he has not even a drop of love for Krishna. So this was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood. And Prabhupada commented in one lecture, now this Trinadapi Shunichena, one may think, oh, it is artificial to think that I'm smaller than the grass in the street. But actually, it is not artificial. It is actually the fact. Why? From the Padma Puran, Vedic literature, we understand that the form of the soul is 1/10,000th part of the upper portion of the hair. We want to be very big, but our constitutional position is to be very small. And apart from that, our present position is that we're in ignorance. Therefore we say agyanati mirandash. We're starting out in ignorance. In the Bhagavad Gita, these are the characteristics of knowledge. Amanitvam arambhitvam himsa kshantir arjavam acharjo pashanam shocham stharyam atma vinigraha indriyarteshu vairagyam anahankara evacha janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam asaktir anabhishvanga putra dara griharishu nityam cha samachitta tvam ishtanishto papattishu mayi chananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharani vivikta desha sevi tvam aratir jana samsadi adhyatma jnana nitya tvam tattva jnana artha darshanam etajjnanam iti proktam ajnanam yad atonyata. This is a list of the qualities of knowledge. The beginning is humility, amanitva. And adambitva means pridelessness. That's the second quality. Nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, indriyarteshu vairagyam, giving up the objects of sense gratification, a topic on which we'll have some discussion in coming days. Indriyarteshu vairagyam anahankara evacha, freedom from false ego. Understanding that I'm not this body and understanding that I'm not this mind. Vivikta desha sevitvam arati janasamsadi adhyatma jnana nityatvam tattva jnana artha darshanam. Understanding, spiritual realization. These items constitute knowledge. Agyanam yadatonyata. Anything contrary to this is nonsense. Agyanam yadatonyata. Anything contrary to this is just garbage. It's not lesser knowledge. It's not partial knowledge. It's not a different kind of knowledge. It's not supplementary knowledge. It's not supporting knowledge. It's nonsense. Agyanam yad ata anyata. Anything contrary to this, anything apart from this, it's all agyan. It's ignorance. Just like our friend here, there's no difference between the self and between the mind and the soul. It's not a different kind of knowledge. It's not a different way of looking at it through. It's all nonsense. The man's a fool. He writes beautifully. He's got a degree from Yale. He's sold hundreds and thousands of books. He's quoted and thought about and respected. And he's a fool. We at once say, you're a fool because you think that you're this body. Huh? Sa eva gokara. We don't give you credit that you're a great, thoughtful person, that you really have a lot to teach us. You're a fool. And why should we hear from you? You think that you're this body. Our new bhaktas know more than you. Agyanamyadatomyata. Whatever you have to say that's against these principles, it's all nonsense. The first qualification is amanitvam. Don't be puffed up with your false knowledge. Having this little degree from the university, you are thinking that you have become so learned, you don't care for God even. This is nonsense. Therefore, first qualification to get progress in knowledge is amanitvam. Don't be proud falsely. Our present education is simply teaching people how to become falsely proud. Just like here, Bhagavad Gita is going on. They're falsely proud. Oh, what have you to learn here? We know everything. We are MA, PhD. We have finished everything. Huh? Again, first of all, amanitva. You have to surrender yourself that I am insignificant. Insignificant. But in beginning, you are puffed up. I am so academic. Now I have got PhD. Rascals. First, beginning is amanitva. And as soon as we become puffed up, a little knowledge is dangerous. Then, finished. So they are doing like that. A little knowledge, I think I have become more than my Guru Maharaj. Finished. That is the defect. That's the defect. Therefore, the brahmacharis were sent. We've got it here? Different place. Anyway. Oh, I know. That's where I was looking. The beginning, amanitva, means to consider oneself foolish and therefore to take guidance from one who knows. Only fools give up the service of the spiritual master and think themselves advanced in spiritual knowledge. To check such fools, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented the perfect example of how to be a disciple. A spiritual master knows very well how to engage each disciple in a particular duty. But if a disciple, thinking himself more advanced than his spiritual master, gives up his orders, and acts independently, he checks his own spiritual progress. Every disciple must consider himself completely unaware of the science of Krishna and must always be ready to carry out the orders of the spiritual master to become competent in Krishna consciousness. A disciple should always remain a fool before his spiritual master. Prabhupada told the story of the music school, some European music school, where if you didn't know music, they'd charge you very heavy fees. And if you did know music, they'd charge you double. Because first they have to unteach you everything that you think you know. Prabhupada was talking with our Dr. Patel in Bombay, and Prabhupada said, saying something, and Dr. Patel says, very easy formula for all the mudhas. And Prabhupada says, yes. Dr. Patel says, like us. And then Prabhupada said, this is intelligence. This is not mudha, this is intelligence. Guru mor mukha deki, korila shashan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, my Guru Maharaj saw me, fool number one. Dr. Patel, so you see me also that way. Prabhupada says, no, that means he is intelligent. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not a fool, that's a fact, but he presented himself like that. He is most learned, But he presented before Guru, I am useless, worthless. Trinadapi Shunichena. I myself, sir, we are all not like you, we are worthless, we people. Unless you understand your worth, we are really worthless. Prabhupada, that is very good. Trinadapi Shunichena Turadapi Sahishnana. That is the qualification for chanting Hare Krishna. Humbler than the grass, tolerant than the tree, giving all respect to others, expecting no respect for oneself. These are the qualifications to become perfectly Krishna conscious. Amanitvam adampitvam ahimsa kshantir arjavam. Amanitva. Although he's very qualified, he says, no, I have no qualification. This is amanitva. This is the beginning of knowledge. The materialistic person, everyone, they're not amanitva. I am so respectable. Brahmachari, that is taught from, this is the philosophy, amanitva adampitva. That is taught from the brahmachari. The small boy, he is taught that you become amanitva adampitva, and he accepts it. Because he's small, the brahmachari may be coming from a king's family, but if he's ordered, my dear boy, take my shoes and brush it, he'll do it, because he's an innocent boy. He learns. Therefore, brahmachari gurukule vasan danta, the mode of life should be trained from brahmachari training. There's an interesting definition Prabhupada gives him, amanitva. Amanitva means not to accept this body as I am. This is amanitva. Everyone is proud that I am Indian, I am American, I am Englishman. So it is boastful, very proud of this body. So knowledge means I am not this body. That is amanitva. Adampitva. As soon as we become aware that I am not this body, then my false pride immediately goes. So this is humility. Whatever assets I have, if I'm very powerful physically, that's this body. If I'm very powerful intellectually, that's this body. It's not myself. I have powerful intellectual capabilities. I'm brilliant. I'm a fantastic speaker. I can do this, that. That means the mind. I've been given some facility. But Prabhupada said the person who's sweeping the temple room is as qualified as the person who's editing back to Godhead. Because the qualification is not what we think the qualification is. That I'm American, I'm Indian, I'm British, I'm intellectual, I'm high school dropout, or I'm this, that. It's all nonsense. And we're very much attached to this nonsense. We misidentify the body with the self. We misidentify the mind with the self. We misidentify material emotions with the self. We are confused. We are confused. Sanatana Goswami approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, everybody says that I'm a pundit, that I'm very intelligent, but I don't even know who I am. That's what kind of pundit I am. And I don't know why the threefold miseries are attacking me. And we're in the same position. We don't know who we are. We're still thinking, still confusing the body with the self, mind with the self, mundane emotions with the self. And we're trying to make some adjustment for the comforts of this body, for the intellectual satisfaction of the mind, for the gratification of the emotions. And we think that's going to fix us. It's not going to fix us. It's going to make a mess of ourselves. Because real fixing means to understand that I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, I'm not this collection of materialistic emotions in relationship to griha, kshetra, sutta, apta, vittai. I'm not. Janasya mohoyam. This is all nonsense. Aham mameti. We have to get free from this bodily conception of life. The same thing is found elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, when the items are giving of the godly qualifications, there's a big list ending with Teja Kshama Dhritisho Chama Droho Natimanita. Natimanita means not expecting very much honor, credit. Natimanita, I'm not very important. That's the godly quality. And the ungodly quality, Dambho Darpo Bhimanascha, Krodha Parushamevacha, Agyanam Chabijatasya, Partasampadam Asami. Pride. Now we have, you know, black pride, white pride, gay pride. We have one person we know in a devotional community who was disappointed because she came to one of our communities to teach a course in self-esteem and was refused because she brought her lover with her, who happened to be another devotional lady. She was probably very qualified to teach a class in self-esteem. How to feel good about yourself. And we're becoming expert at that. How to break the regulative principles, how to disobey the orders of the spiritual master, how to know more than our guru, how to do this, how to do that, how to do all nonsense, and think that, yes, I'm doing something good. And you should also appreciate it, and that's called accepting one another as we are. And if we don't accept one another as we are, then something's really fishy with us, you know, something's wrong. I have to understand that you're just, you know, when you walk off with my wife or when you do this or that or the other thing, you're just following your propensities, you're just, you know, making the necessary adjustments so that you can be happy in devotional service. You're just doing all of these things in such a way as to advance your spiritual life. And I have to accept you as you are and feel good about you and on and on and on and on. In the old days, we just say, you're all nonsense. You're a rascal. You're a fool. You're a debauchee. But now we have to bring in all this psychological jargon and accept one another as we are and love one another and all of that stuff. One time Prabhupada went to meet, in very old days, back before I came, Prabhupada met, there was one sannyasi, outside sannyasi, not our movement, teacher, who was ill. And Prabhupada, I believe, spoke to him on the phone, if I have it right. Satsuki Maharaj told me this story. And from Prabhupada's side, the conversation went, I love you too, Swamiji, but not on this bodily platform. So we all love one another, but it's not love me, love my disease. We make a distinction between the person and his disease condition. And from that point of view, we can love every living entity. And we accept all living beings as they are. That is, we accept that they are what they are. The Brahmin is a Brahmin. The dog is a dog. The sage is a sage. The fool is a fool. We accept them all as they are. But it doesn't mean that we accept the fool as a sage or the dog as a human being. Some distinctions are required. Unless we want to go in for a philosophy which posits as a basic principle that everything is one. I have a lot more to say, but maybe I'll hold it for now and see if we have some questions or comments. Yes?
First, one obvious question comes to mind from the beginning of your lecture when you were speaking about how we don't need any other technique other than Krishna consciousness. this is running off of this, but the thing that came to my mind is different seminars we have these days, even in this one about management and management techniques. The obvious question in the light of your reflection, do we need these things, or should we just follow what the Prabhupada has given in terms of hearing and chanting, even his instructions, say, in relation to management?
Do we need, the question is that, since I said we don't need anything but Krishna consciousness, now do we need all these seminars that are popping up on management techniques, or do we just accept what Prabhupada said and leave it at that? That's your question. Okay. Point one is, we start by accepting what Prabhupada said. If your management guru teaches you something better than what Prabhupada said, tell him to go to hell. People did it. Just, we know someone who learned about a big umbrella corporation in America. And he couldn't understand when Prabhupada told him that it was all nonsense, that it was rubbish. The person was practically blown out of the water when Prabhupada told him that it was all nonsense. Huh? Because he learned it from, you know, he paid a lot of money to big lawyers and got the best professional advice. And here was Prabhupada saying that it was rubbish. But Prabhupada knew what he was doing. Prabhupada deliberately wanted small, independent centers where the devotees would become strong and self-reliant, not a big umbrella corporation where three or four people would know everything and everybody else would be like a little yo-yo. Prabhupada knew what he was doing. The same thing in the very early days when the devotees had the idea they were dealing with some big businessman who wanted them to buy some house, and Prabhupada said, don't give them a penny. And told them again and again, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And they did it, and lost all the money. And the same thing again in Bombay, 8 years later, where Prabhupada said, your position is strong in Bombay. And he is bluffing you. You're innocent boys, and he is cheating and bluffing you. Our position is strong. And still the devotees thought that Prabhupada's he doesn't understand. And they nearly blew the whole thing, and Prabhupada had to snatch it back. Thinking that Prabhupada, you know, is just an elderly Indian gentleman and doesn't really understand what's going on. Prabhupada was hipper than everybody else. He knew the whole story of the material world. He knew A to Z what was going on. And whatever he said was right. So that's the first thing. Now, as far as the second thing, it's not that nothing can be learned in terms of material techniques. For editing, I go out and I read the standard instructional books about how to edit. Okay? So I take advantage of their knowledge. But if I start thinking with that little bit of technical knowledge that now I can walk away with everything, then I'm lost. If I think, now I'm such a hotshot editor, I can change Prabhupada all around, and I can see that he didn't really mean this, he meant that, and he really didn't explain this adequately, he could have said so much more, and a footnote here and an extra paragraph there, and this paragraph's really silly and we'll take it out, and Prabhupada really shouldn't have said this about women because people aren't going to understand it, and he shouldn't have said it about those people, and he shouldn't have said it about... And, you know, pretty soon I'm such a hotshot that I'm on my way to hell fast. So, everything may have its utility. But once we start running away with it, or once rather it starts running away with us, we can go really far in the wrong direction quickly. Management is good. Our temples should be nicely managed. And yes, we may learn some practical techniques from people who've been managing for years and years and years. But the real thing is our spiritual substance. And I'm next door neighbor with Naveen Krishna Prabhu, and I know that this is the thing that he's pushing on. His number one concern, he's our management expert, his number one concern is managers who don't follow strict devotional life. Managers who don't get up in the morning. Managers who don't chant 16 rounds a day. Managers who don't go to Mangalarti. Managers who don't read the books. managers who aren't Krishna conscious. Because you can, you know, you can covey it up all you want, and if you're not Krishna conscious, it's not going to fly. You'll have the best managed scene, and it'll all fall apart without Krishna. That's everything zero without Krishna? Huh? Otherwise, everything has some value. Your covey, your this, your that. We can dovetail everything. They're all useless. But if you connect it with Krishna, somehow you use it for Krishna, it may have some value. But if you think that the zero is the one, you've got it backwards. You've got it backwards. If you start pushing all those zeros to the left and start pushing all those one, that one to the right, finally you'll decide, what's that anomalous one doing there at the end? And you'll push it off and you'll have all zeros. Each time you move, you drop down by, what is it, power of 10? Not power of 10, but you drop down one order of strength. And finally you push the one off altogether and you got nothing. Prabhupada told Hridayananda Maharaj, your business as GBC is to see that in all the temples, everyone is following the regulative principles. He said, then management will be at your fingertips. Then management will be at your fingertips. So before we go on to the advanced management techniques, this is the beginning. And our own management advisors are telling us this is where we're weak. So it's again a question of priorities. First we have to get this down. 16 rounds a day, 4 regulative principles, read Prabhupada's books, be strong in Krishna consciousness. Then edit or manage or fix cars or whatever your service may be. And even if you remain a material idiot, if you don't know any of these things, if you become fully Krishna conscious, Krishna will tell you. That's a fact. You don't study, you don't go to school, you don't consult any of the books, you don't do anything. You become fully Krishna conscious and Krishna will tell you what you need to know. But you study all the books and you do everything and you don't become Krishna conscious, you'll be a failure, you won't know anything. And I'm not suggesting it's either or, that you have to be fully Krishna conscious and you can't peek at a book on, you know, how to drive a car. But we should have our priorities straight. Is that okay? And specifically, if you find that you're becoming real powerful on management, you've got all the books by all the management authorities and you're all immersed in it, but you're not advancing in Krishna consciousness, your priorities are wrong. And same way, if your people start saying, well, okay, you know, this, that, the other thing, what about Krishna? And you have to look and say, well, you know, what am I teaching here?
So maybe there has to be some kind of standard before devotees do these things.
I don't have an opinion. I'm not a management expert. And I'm not the person about rules and regulations, and I haven't attended any of the management seminars except one or two really early ones by Naveen Krishna Prabhu. I learned how to get a day timer. It was very useful. But I don't, you know, I'm not much of a manager myself. I rely on people who can manage, because I can't. I'm terrible. So I just, you know, I take the easy way out. I rely on people who are going to, I figure, you know, at 50, I'm not going to learn. It's too late. Lost cause. Hopeless. If I was going to be a big manager, I would have done it by now. I'd be on my 3rd million. So I just rely on people who can do it. For Back to Godhead in India, I have an MBA running the magazine, and I just ask him what we should do. And we talk a little bit. I don't manage. If you can manage, it's great. That's what is that? That you have to know what you can do and what you can't do. I can't manage. Why should I pretend? And people who can should. Chaturvarna Nimaya Shushtam. Is that okay? Another question? Yes?
I remember reading a quote. I'm not sure. I believe it's from Hari Das Thakur. It says, of all the miserable persons in the world, I am the most miserable. And on the other hand, we hear that Krishna consciousness is a joyful process. So how do we find the balance? How do we combine these moves? Does feeling bad about yourself mean that you should feel bad?
Yes. Does Krishna consciousness mean you should feel bad? Yes, you should feel bad. This is a topic we'll discuss more. I don't know if you're going to want to come tomorrow. But we intend to discuss this at some length. But I have a comment from Prabhupada. Kaviraj Goswami says, I'm more sinful than Jagai Madhai. Jagai Madhai hoite mui se papishta. Mor nam je loi sharapunya koi. I'm so low grade that somebody takes my name, whatever little pious action is there, lost. In this way he's presenting. Sanatan Goswami presenting himself, nich jati, nich karma, nich asanga. They're not artificial. A Vaishnav actually thinks like that. That is Vaishnav. He's never proud of, and just the opposite number. Oh, I've got this, I've got this, who is equal to me, I'm so rich, I am so this and that. That is the distinction. So we have to learn Tridanapi, Shunichena, Turodapi, Sahishnana, and follow the footprint of Prahlad Maharaj. Then surely you shall be accepted by Nrisingadev, Krishna, without any failure. So it's not that just to instruct us or as a matter of hype, just putting on, oh, you're so great, oh, no, you're so great, oh, no, you're really so... No. Vaishnav actually thinks himself to be unqualified. Not just that he's officially says, oh, I'm really unqualified. He feels himself to be unqualified. So that if any credit is there, it's the credit belongs to Krishna, or the credit belongs to the spiritual master, not to him personally. So that's the first thing, that humility he actually feels. And lamentation also he feels. Smita Krishna Maharaj was talking about this yesterday, that one thing is that there's a certain pleasure, even in the material world. People, you know, they get drunk and they wallow in self-pity. Why? There's a certain taste in that. They get some pleasure there. So it's a perverted reflection that on the spiritual platform also one derives a certain pleasure from feeling that I'm low. One reason is because now he's in touch with reality. The karmis, the materialists, they get great pleasure from, you know, building themselves up and finally discovering that they have unlimited potential. That if they just think in the right way, if they just train their minds and focus and don't allow any contrary thought to enter their mind, if they meditate and mold their lives in such a way, success is theirs. You can have unlimited success if you only want it. That's all that stands between you and whatever you desire. Do you really want it? Do you really want to be able to go out there and sell? You know, and so on and so on and so on. And people get filled with themselves and think that really I could be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If only I can get in touch with my source of inner power. Nitya Gyani Vimohita. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in this way they're thoroughly bewildered. Nitya Gyani, by ignorance. What potential do they have? Potential to get old, potential to get diseased, and potential to die. And yes, it's unlimited potential because you can do it again and again and again and again. Yes.
Maharaj, you said that you don't manage, or you don't...
I barely manage.
Okay. But I'm wondering now, can you give definition for managing?
Well, maybe that's the next seminar. But I'm not very effective at getting things done, you know, in terms of moving the material energy around and getting the right people in the right place and getting them all plugged in and enthusiastic about what they're doing and getting them all working as a tight organization and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's all, I work a different way, you know. Give me a piece of paper and say, you know, this is it, we need these 20 pages back by 4 o'clock. And you don't have to do anything else, because then my life gets complicated if I have to do this and something else also, it starts to bewilder me. So you just give me my marching orders and tell me what to do and I'll have it for you by 4. That's what it means when I say I can't manage. I don't know about the rest of you. Some of us, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is amazing. That he can do, you know, from 1 o'clock to 1:30 he does this. From 1:30 to 1:40 he does that. From 1:40 till 2 o'clock he does the next thing. He has lunch at exactly 2 o'clock or whatever hour he decides it's going to be. He does this and it's all compartmentalized. It's all done with complete focus. From 1:40 to 1:60 he's not thinking about what he's doing, going to do from 2:30 to 2:45. He's completely organized, amazingly organized. He can have so many things up in the air and not drop one of them. Super capable and competent. And the energy that he can put into any one of those things, get out of the way. That's Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So why shall I pretend to be Tamal Krishna Maharaj? I'm not Tamal Krishna Maharaj. I can't do that. Krishna gave him that capability, and he didn't give it to me. And, you know, I can hypnotize myself as much as I want. And at the end of the day, you know, I may think I'm Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Pondruka, he pasted on an extra 2 arms and he became Narayan. Nitya Gyani Vimohita. Some other question?
Danger to misunderstand one's material qualifications as spiritual advancement is extremely,
yes,
extremely high, and
yes,
the pain is resulting of that is also extremely high.
Yeah.
So,
good point. I'll say it on the microphone. That the danger of confounding one's material qualifications with spiritual qualifications is extremely high. And the pain that can result is also extremely high. If I think that because I'm a good editor, or I'm a good manager, or I'm a good cook, or I'm a good electrician, or I'm a good anything, that means that I must be a great devotee. That's Maya. Now, it may be that by the grace of Krishna, I'm able to cook nicely, or do puja nicely, or edit nicely, or manage nicely. But it's not simply because I could do those things that I must be Krishna conscious. It's confounding material and spiritual qualifications. The Protestant ethic has that idea, that if I'm making money, I must be advanced in God consciousness. Because it means that God is bestowing His grace upon me, and why would He do it unless I were really a great Christian? Hiranyakashipu made a lot of bucks too. It wasn't because he was a great devotee. Yes, go on.
This problem is especially found amongst spiritual communities because mm-hmm. other ones doesn't have even
they don't care
to be spiritually advanced.
Right.
So how do you deal with that?
Therefore, Amanitva. He's saying that this idea confounding of spiritual and material qualifications arises especially in spiritual communities because the material communities don't care. Although that now they've also developed that. They want to have in their material life, you know, people who are spiritual, which means people like Bill Clinton. Because he had the honesty to to go for counseling or something like that. You know, he had the honesty and the openness. You know, so he's a very spiritual person. Because people are looking for spiritual leaders on the level of Bill Clinton and, you know. So it's starting to, people are feeling that some spiritual component is missing in their life, even the materialists. But what you're saying is right, that essentially in spiritual communities is where this comes about, because in spiritual life we place a premium on spiritual qualification or spiritual characteristics. So what do you do when you're in a community and you find that the members of the community are confusing the two and they think that because of my material qualifications I must be spiritually the most qualified? So therefore we have to go back to the philosophy. We have to understand that I'm not this body, that I'm not this mind, that these material credentials are not my eternal characteristics, that I wasn't always, you know, throughout eternal time, a great mathematician or a great editor or a great fix-it man or a great any of that, and that I won't be forever and ever and ever. My real credentials consist of the extent to which I take shelter of Krishna and the extent to which I sincerely try to carry out the orders of the spiritual master, not my material characteristics. Otherwise, you could look, and there are people who knew English better than Prabhupada. There were people who were greater literary figures than Prabhupada. There were people who had nicer voices than Prabhupada. There were people who this, that, and the other thing. But Prabhupada was the person who was completely sold out to Krishna. And therefore, all of his characteristics are existing on the spiritual platform. There's no question of material. Some less intelligent people thought that Swami Maharaj was successful because he was a good businessman, or because he had American followers, or this or that. They didn't understand. The real qualification, Prabhupada had that real qualification, that whatever his spiritual master said, Prabhupada believed it. Prabhupada said, when I examine myself, I was just reading, he said, sometimes that I examine why this wonderful thing has happened to me. And why this wonderful thing has happened to me. Spreading Krishna consciousness. Why this wonderful thing has happened to me. And he said, I can only think is because I believed in the orders of my Guru Maharaj. And because I believed in what my Guru Maharaj said. That's the qualification. So we have to understand the philosophy. We have to go back to the books and read them and understand them. And we have to recognize that these are the qualities of knowledge. Amanitvam, adambitvam, ahimsak, shantirarjavam, charjupashanam, kshocham, shantirarjavam, atma vinigraha, indriyarteshu vairagyam, anaham kara evacha, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha dosha nidarshana, asaktana bishvanga putra dhara griharishu, and so on. We have to know what knowledge is, and at the same time, itya jnana vimohita. Anything which is opposed, it's ignorance. So we have to know these things, and the beginning is humility. If we're humble, everything will be good. If we're humble, everything will go good.
Sometimes humility doesn't seem so practical because maybe I'm in charge in some department and I got it together because I have good material qualities and therefore I can't hold position, and if I am too humble, then everything
pressed down. So.
No, you can't be too humble. You can't be too humble. Even the material managers will tell you that. It's not that there's that you can be, if you're humble, you'll blow it. You may have to take some strong measure. But if you're humble, you know that I'm just like Krishna. He smashed Kaliya, completely drove him out, and at the end, Krishna said that it was my duty, please excuse me, what can I do? Or Prabhupada, I'll read you one. This is Prabhupada, who was certainly not slouchy when it came to accomplishing things. Devotee Prajapati says to Prabhupada, in the early days of this movement, Srila Prabhupada, in New York, devotees said that they did not know how to treat your divine grace. They did not know your exalted position. I think we are still very much offensive. Prabhupada, no, I am servant. I have no exalted position. Servant. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat down in a place where people were washing their feet. And there's a break. Prabhupada said, a representative of Krishna. I came to preach Krishna consciousness, and Krishna has sent so many representatives to help me. I consider like that. Without your help, I could not do. So I wanted Krishna's help, so Krishna has sent you. Therefore, you are representative of Krishna. That is my conception. So that's the way of thinking of the person who spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So, are we going to do more with our, you know, prestige and feeling of self-confidence and newfound sense of self-worth and all of that? Are we going to beat out Prabhupada's accomplishments? Prabhupada felt that I have no exalted position, but I prayed to Krishna and he sent some people to help me. Well, that's humility. And Prajapati said, we're just dogs, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, barking at your feet, that's all. And that is your humbleness. That is nice. So that's nice. And you ask yourself, which of your managers you're happier with? The ones who manifestly have a difficulty with their sense of self-worth, or the ones who are genuinely helpful, genuinely humble? Who do you want to do more to please? Manager means who can get people to do things. So who do you want to work for? The person who thinks he's the lord of all he surveys, or the person who's humble? Who's going to draw more service out of you? Yes. Louder, please.
You still encourage people, encourage people to do certain accomplishments and that, to be like that, to increase their self-esteem?
Throw a few rocks at the kids, okay? Sorry.
Is to encourage people to do certain accomplishments or services, like to increase their self-esteem, or because it's
to encourage people. You don't have to increase their self-esteem, their evaluation of how much they're worth. They're not worth beans. The person who's worth something is Krishna. And if they depend on Krishna, then they're worth something. Prabhupada, Brahmananda Prabhu, was it Brahmananda Prabhu? No, it was that scholar, Thomas Hopkins, Thomas Hopkins, the scholar. He remarked about Brahmananda Prabhu that Prabhupada gave him the business of running a magazine. And he said the guy didn't know anything about a magazine except to read one. He said, but Prabhupada said that, no, you do it and Krishna will help you. And that was the secret, he said, that Prabhupada convinced all these people that you just do this and Krishna will help you. He didn't say, you know, that I will help you, that I'll give you the power, or that you'll find this tremendous power, you know, within yourself. But Krishna will help you. So our business is not to drum into our heads or hearts our feeling of you know, how capable and really powerful we are. It's just to accept that Krishna is capable. And if I depend on Krishna, then anything can happen. Then anything can happen. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj likes to say that he believes in miracles. Miracles means you depend on Krishna. Krishna can do something wonderful. That's the secret. Why build up, why do I have to flatter you and build up your sense of how great you are? What good is that going to do for you? Prabhupada gave the example that you're riding on a bicycle and you're going at so many kilometers an hour and then you grab onto the back of a truck and all of a sudden your bicycle's going zoom. Not because you're suddenly pedaling with more power, because you grab the truck is going. So you dovetail your capability with Krishna's capability and all of a sudden you can do wonderful things. Yasya prasada, bhagavat prasada. And yasya prasada, nagatir kutopi. Cut yourself off from Krishna, you're nothing. Kaviraj Goswami also says that someplace, that if you remember Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even the most difficult things become very easy. And you forget Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and even the easiest things become difficult. Therefore, Prabhupada said there's no shortage of anything in the world except Krishna consciousness. Yes.
Should we use also then flattery in Sankirtan?
Flattery, everything has its value. Therefore, Prabodhananda Saraswati is saying that I'm falling down at your feet and I'm praising you in so many ways. Hey Sadhava, you're a great saintly person. Now give up all your nonsense and surrender to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Everything has its proper application in Krishna's service. The main actor in everything is Krishna. And we're meant to be assistants of the assistants of the assistants of the assistants of Krishna. And if we take that position, that's our whole business, just to remember that we're tiny servants of Krishna. That's called real ego. And to think that I'm independently qualified is false ego. Oh, anahankara evacha. This is one of the items of knowledge, to get free from false ego. False ego means to think I'm independently something. I am something. One time Satsrupa Maharaj asked Prabhupada, how can I think that I'm nothing? He wanted to be humble. How can I think that I'm nothing? Prabhupada said, you're not nothing. You're something. But you're not this body. So that should be our understanding. Not that we're nothing, and not that we're the all-powerful, unlimited, infinitely capable, independent entity which only needs a tiny bit of adjustment before he becomes Superman. We just have to surrender to Krishna, then everything's all right. All right. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. For those who'd like copies of this invocation, there are printouts available where? Here in the corner of the desk.